Okay, good morning, everyone, and as always, we welcome everyone to our Sunday morning share. The topic today is something which is relevant, very much times, and quite controversial, and that is the inyan of organ transplants, or more specifically, of organ donations. With the great advancements that have been made in the fields of medicine, it's possible today to do many, many things to help a person who is seriously ill. And transplants is something which has become, in certain areas, very common, in certain areas, less common. But the question comes up in a lot of these types of situations, what exactly is the halacha? Is it permissible to do such a thing or not? And I'd like to try to address some of the major ones, and obviously this is a very, very broad topic. There's a tremendous amount that has been written on it in halachic discussions back and forth, to pile it up from here to the ceiling probably, in terms of what's been written on it. But nevertheless, try to get a basic overview so we have a working understanding of what the issues are. The connection to Parshas Vayechi will become apparent soon when we read the tshuva of the Novi Yehuda. Okay, so first and foremost, to start out, the idea of a person going to the fullest extent possible to save a Jewish life is derived by the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin. I apologize, not the sheet, but the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Ayin Gimel, the Gemara says, Minayin l'roes chaderu shutoveh benar. How do we know? From where in the Torah do we know that if a person sees his fellow man drowning, or he's being attacked by some sort of wild animal, or he is being attacked by bandits or some sort of thieves, how do we know that in such a case you're obligated to go and try to rescue this person? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara quotes a possible that we came across a number of weeks ago. Losaman al dam reyecha means you should not stand by your fellow man's blood, which the Chazal are interpreting to mean, the Chachamim are interpreting to mean, that you should not stand by. A person is prohibited to stand by and allow another person to be harassed in any which way. That's a chiv, and it's a mitzvah, and the Torah is counted as one of the mitzvahs, that a person has to do whatever he can. If he sees his fellow Jew being attacked in any way, he has to go to the fullest extent to try to save that person. And therefore, the Gemara here is speaking in the physical realm, where he sees him drowning. So even if he's not necessarily a professional lifeguard, but nevertheless, if he thinks he has the ability to save him, or he might have the ability to save him, he has to go try to do something. You can't walk away. You can't turn your head and walk away and say, "I got other things to do." You have to put yourself out to try to save another person. Now, that's the basic concept that is underlies the whole inyan of organ donations, because there's an inyan of lo samad al dam reyecha. In other words, if a person says, "Well, this fellow is going to die if he doesn't get a kidney, or if he doesn't get a bone marrow, and I could give it to him," so now again, we'll have to see, how safe is it to give it to him may play a role in determining this. But let's say, theoretically speaking, all things being equal, if I have the ability to do something to help him, so the Torah obligates us to do something. You can't stand by and just let it go. And therefore, in the safest, simplest case, if there was a person who needed blood, okay, a person who had hemorrhaged to such a point that he needs blood, and without the blood transfusion he's going to die, and you know about it and you can help him, so you're obligated to do whatever you can to go give that person blood, even according to the poskim, if it means taking off from work, even if it means a loss of money, a person has to, because this is a losa, I say in the Torah, this is a lot, losaman al dam reyecha, and generally speaking, the rule by losa, I say, is that a person has to be willing to give up all of his money. But when it comes to certainly, if it's just an hour or so, and you have the ability, you could help this guy. You have the same blood type as he, and it's painless, it's nothing, the blood regenerates in a healthy person very quickly, you don't feel it at all. So there is no excuse. A person is 100% obligated, based on this Gemara, to save him. And so too, if you saw a person being attacked, or you know, physically attack, and you have the ability, you think you can do something, you'll get in there, maybe it'll, you know, balance things out, maybe it'll scare off the criminal, you have to go ahead and do it. Now, the question that comes up is that what happens if a person is, can save someone else, but it's going to cost him a part of his body? In other words, until now we were discussing, let's say, donating blood where it requires taking off from work. So you'll say, well, it's a loss of money, but on the other hand, I can save the person's life. So that, for sure, a person has to do. But what about if it's a situation where, as you mentioned at the outset, the person needs a kidney? So now I believe that the medical accepted viewpoint on this is that a healthy person can live with one kidney, and therefore, you know, the person has two, and this fellow is going to die if he doesn't get one of them, and there's going to be a match. And let's assume that we know it'll be a pretty good chance for a match. So now the question presents itself, do you have to go so far to do that? Do you have to go so far to do that? So does Lo Samel al Dam Re'echo say that a person has to actually go up and give part of his body to help someone else or not? So this is discussed in the poskim, and the tshuva, the main tshuva that pertains to this is was written by the Radbaz, Rabbeinu David ben Zimra, who was a rabbi in Egypt in the 1500s. And essentially, the question came up to him, if a person, it wasn't exactly with a transplant, I don't believe anybody was doing any sort of transplants in the 16th century, but the question was, to save another Jew, if it's going to cost me a limb, it's going to cost me, for whatever reason, if I'm going to get involved, it's going to cost me a limb to save that person. Okay? So the Radbaz says as follows, it's quoted here on the second side of the sheet in the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein on this topic. And he says that v'dvarim yesh chiyuv le'echad lachtoch evaro b'shvil atzolos nefesh al chavero. He says, am I obligated to sever one of my limbs in order to save someone else's life? So he says, kivin shepligi revusa b'zeh eim l'chayiv karad vaz b'tshuva shehevim pizchei tshuva yeredeh. So he says that when it comes to this, so that he quotes the Radbaz, that the Radbaz essentially said that in such a situation, a person is not obligated. Not obligated. Meaning that you're not, it's not a chiv. In other words, when it comes to something that's painless, then a person is absolutely obligated. So when it comes to, let's say, something like giving blood, you have to. There's no question, why shouldn't you do it? But here, where it comes to, when the topic is, it's going to affect the person, definitely going to affect the person, not going to be the same as he was until now, and it's significant change, he's severing a limb of his body. So there, the Radbaz says that as far as an obligation, we cannot say that he's obligated to do so. And he says, so the question is why exactly that is. So apparently, Rav Moshe Feinstein did not see the Radbaz inside, but he actually admits to that here. He says he didn't have the sefer in front of him, but he speculates that he thinks that, he says the reason is because of the fact that when it comes to the mitzvah of Lo Samel al Dam Re'echa, when it comes to any mitzvahs Lo Saseh, so if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, if you look in the poskim say that a person is obligated to give up all of his money not to transgress a prohibition in the Torah. But they don't go a step further. They don't say that you're even obligated to give up part of your body not to transgress an Isser in the Torah. In other words, let's say, for example, in the times of religious persecution, a guy would have said to a Jew, if you don't eat pig, I'm going to cut your arm off. So is a person obligated to have to undergo that or not? So it's not a sakonis nefashis, let's assume, okay, it would jeopardize his life, of course he could eat it. But it's only going to jeopardize part of his body. So the Radbaz, so Rav Moshe Feinstein said that if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't ever say that you have to go that far. The most it says is that a person would, if you can pay the guy off, then you'd have to pay the fellow off. But to go ahead and sever a part of a person's body, we don't find anywhere that a person is obligated to do that. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, that's why we cannot say it's an obligation to do such a thing. The Radbaz inside seems to say that it's due to the fact that the Torah, we say in the davening often that the Drachea, Darchei Noam, that the ways of the Torah are pleasant, And to tell a person to go ahead and actually undergo such a serious alteration to his physical body would not be darchei noam. That's not the pleasant ways. We always say, right, we sing it in shul, drachei darchei noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. To say that you have to undergo such a thing would seem to contradict that concept, and therefore the Radbaz ruled that a person is not obligated to do so. Okay, so basically, the basic framework when we approach this type of topic is that when it comes to the idea of some sort of donation to a person who is in medical need, so the underlying principle clearly is Losamen al Damreyecha, that a person can't stand by and watch his fellow Jew suffer, and you have to do, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, you have to do anything possible to try to stop that, to try to prevent that. And therefore, if, and this is a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah, that the person is obligated, it's not an option, this is an obligation. And therefore, if you had any which way to save a person without jeopardizing yourself, you would have to. However, when it comes, and thus something simple like donating blood would be an obligation, but when it comes to going ahead and giving a body part, so that is more of an issue. There you can't say that it's an obligation because of the fact that the Radbaz ruled that we don't find anywhere such a concept. The Shulchan Aruch never, the Poskim, the Gemara never said such a thing. And in truth, it really doesn't seem to be logical from a Torah standpoint that a person has to go to that line. Now, another question, Yehuda.
Okay, one step further. Now, with the blood donation mobiles and the blood drives,
yeah,
is it a chiyuv to donate?
Because
in general, because you're not dealing with a specific person.
Okay, so we'll see. Maybe we'll see about that. In other words, if you're not dealing with a specific person, it may not be the same. It may not, it's hard to know, you know, it depends what they're collecting the blood for, you know, I assume, I don't know the ins and outs, I assume they need it for somebody, but you know, I'm speaking specifically, if you hear of a person who's in need, there's no question that a person has to drop what they're doing and go give that person blood. Okay, now, a related question that comes up would be, what if doing such an activity is going to put yourself into suffix sakon? If doing such, engaging in such an activity is going to put a person into the possibility, he's putting himself at some degree of risk. In other words, the person who needs the donation is in vadai sakon. The person is going to die if they don't get this donation. But for me to do it is going to put myself in a suffix of sakon. So this is seems to be a debate in the Gemara itself. The basic underlying principle that we work with in the halacha, it's well known, the Gemara's famous statement that who says that your blood is redder than your fellow man's blood, which is the explanation given by the Gemara for the fact that murder is not something that could ever be done even to save your own life. The Gemara says that's one of the three cardinal sins, is Ritzicha, and if one looks in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, you will see that the Gemara learns that out in Svara. The Gemara did not feel the need for a pasuk to teach that concept, but rather the Gemara says it's logical, because who says you're better than him? Why is your blood redder than his? You're going to kill him to stay alive? Why? That means you're making a judgment that you're better than him. And the Gemara puts this forth as an absolute fact, and there are no qualifications, and therefore a person cannot even say, well, I'm Torah observant and he isn't. That doesn't go into it. It doesn't matter. Nobody knows what the story is. Nobody knows. And therefore, a person is not ever allowed to kill someone else to save their own life. Okay, however, unless of course the person is coming to kill them, that's an exception. In other words, if someone is coming, a rodef, so there the Torah says you're allowed to defend yourself and kill that person. But it's a question of killing someone else to save myself, where the person is not a threat to me, just that somehow, you know, if I killed him, I'd get out of the problem, so that you're never allowed to do that, is without any qualifications. The question is raised, some people want a question, it's brought in the Gemara, whether that goes so far as to say that you even have to put yourself in a suffix sakana, right? Because of the fact that, see, that this principle works in the reverse also. In other words, my blood is not redder than his, but his blood is not redder than mine. So therefore, if I am going to go ahead and try to save him and I'm likely going to die from saving him, I don't have to do that either. In other words, the same way I can't kill him to save myself, I don't have to kill myself to save him. So therefore, if a person was drowning and there's a fellow standing on the beach who doesn't know how to swim, but he thinks maybe if he can go out there, he'll somehow manage to save the guy who's drowning, but he'll probably die himself. So that you don't have to do. Because the same concept of who says that my blood is redder than yours applies both ways. Who says your blood is redder than mine? Right? Why I'm gonna die? Why I don't have to die to save you? That is another principle that goes into this. So therefore, obviously, goes without saying that for a person to donate an organ that would jeopardize his own life would be prohibited by the Torah, because how could you do that? How could you do that? You can't kill yourself, so you'll save him. You say, well, he's younger, so, you know, I already lived so many years, let this person, he's a young man, let him have it. You know, the person's not allowed to do that. You can't do that, because the basic attitude is that we don't know whose blood is redder than the next person, so to speak. The metaphor, meaning you don't know why does he deserve to live more than you. Who knows what the cheshbonos are? Only God knows that. So therefore, a person never, there's no mitigating factor. You can't take anything, even if the guy is you say, well, he's a criminal, you know, he's a lifelong criminal, and I'm an upstanding person, you know, or the reverse, I'm a criminal, he's an upstanding person, maybe I should give him all my organs, you know, to save him, at least he'll be a good guy, you know, I'm already finished, right? But the fact of the matter is, you can never do that. Yes, I'm sorry.
If you are saving by giving your life away, if you are saving a person that, for example, is a doctor or an officer in
yes.
the army,
yes.
and he's saving many other Jews.
Yes, it seems that you can't do it. It seems from the halacha that you cannot. In the military situation, it's different. In a war, the rules may change, you know. But I'm saying, basically speaking, in other words, in a day to day type of life situation, you can't say, even if the person you're going to save is the Gadol Hadar, you say, oh, Klal Yisrael needs him. And if he doesn't get my liver, he's gonna die, right? And you know, but as far as myself is concerned, you know, so I'll take a hit for the team. You know, I went ahead. You know, I'm a dedicated Jew, and I'm gonna go ahead and give him my heart or something like that. You know, and you can't do that. A person's not allowed to do that. The choice is not given to a person. That's the basic concept of the basic viewpoint from religious Jewish morality, how you view life. In other words, you can't say you're better than him, but you can't say he's better than you either. You don't know. So therefore, a person has to go with that as a general rule. Thus, to put yourself in sakana, a person would not be allowed. Now what about to put a person to put himself in suffix sakana? What if you say that, well, you know, he's definitely gonna die. I may or may not. I'm definitely jeopardizing myself. I'm endangering myself. But I may make it. But he's definitely going to die if I don't get involved. So that is a question. But it seems to be an indication in the Gemara and the Yerushalmi. It seems to be an indication that that would change things, because then we would say that maybe in such a situation, you would have to do it, because, you know, as far as you're concerned, you can't say, why is his blood redder than mine? Because he's definitely going to die. You may not. So therefore, there is a view in halacha that says maybe you should have to do that. However, the consensus of the poskim is that you don't have to do that either. In other words, a person does not have to put himself into a suffix sakana to save someone. So therefore, for example, if God forbid there was a building on fire and a person was not a trained fireman, he doesn't have the equipment, and he runs into the building and he says, I may die, but the person in the building is definitely going to die if I don't get in there. So if it's a suffix sakana, it seems that the consensus of the poskim is that you're not obligated to do such a thing. Right, that a person does not have to do such a thing because of the fact that you don't have to put yourself even in suffix sakana to save a person for a vadas.
Not obligated, or you can't?
I believe you can't, but I don't want to go that far. I didn't check that out well enough. But you're definitely not obligated to do so. Anyway, so now like this.
How about a bodyguard? Bodyguard is supposed to give his life in reference to save the one he's supporting.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know in halacha if that's the right
thing.
Take
the bullet.
You mean he's supposed to, like the president's guy, is supposed to run in front in case someone shoots? Okay, I don't know in halacha if that's the right thing to do. I don't know which poskim they ask that to.
Yeah, it's fun.
I haven't seen too many Secret Service guys with payas and a beard. What's that?
In Israel.
No, I understand. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. Again, when it comes to military, see, I don't believe that they're really, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if it's really a suffix sakana. In other words, I think the knowledge that those people are there deter people from attacking. You know, I think that's really the issue. But to actually go ahead and put yourself on the line and say, "Hey, don't shoot him, shoot me," I don't know. It's part of the job description. I don't know if that's the right thing to do. I don't know. So anyway, okay. Now,
if that's your job, you're taking that job as a contract, and that's your job to do that.
Yeah,
yeah. So you're obligated.
The question is, should you take such a job? No. Yeah, once he has the job, he's in a tough situation. You know, and at the time, you know, when Kennedy was shot that time, you know, had the bodyguard pulled out the Shulchan Aruch and said, you know, I'm staying out of this. You know, I don't think that would have gone over too well. You know, but the fact of the matter is that a person has to know in advance, what are you getting yourself into? Maybe you shouldn't take such a job. I don't know. It's a good shot. I don't know.
The bodyguard covered President Johnson. Oh, he put his body over President Johnson.
Okay. Listen, I, it's hard to know. I think that, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that in some of those situations, it's at best a suffix, and they think it's not even going to come to that. I don't know. Maybe it would be interesting to ask some great post-it, what if you're allowed to take such a job? I don't know. Anyway, now, the big question that comes up in our times with the organ donations is the question of an organ that has to be taken out, or the expression is harvested, from a mace. Okay, there are certain organs that, in order to be transplanted, are commonly transplanted from a dead body. Okay, and that's where the big, big issue and controversy comes in. Okay, the question is, can a person, starting from a simple question of, can a person donate his body to science? In other words, can a person, every medical school, they have cadavers, they have to, obviously it's something which is needed. So a person will say, look, you know, when I die, I die, so let me just go ahead and give my body away. What's the difference? Anyway, as Jews, we value the neshama. Right? We say that the neshama is the main part, is the lifelong tension between the neshama and the guf, the soul. The person pulls them in one direction, the body pulls them in a different direction. So after a person dies, the neshama's gone anyway, so okay, I'll give my body to science, or I will, you know, allow my organs to be harvested to take care of the needs of a person who is seriously ill. Okay, now this is a very, very serious issue, which touches on a number of points in the halacha. Okay, and the groundbreaking tshuva that was written on this topic was written in the 18th century by Rabbi Cheskel Landau. Rabbi Cheskel Landau was a world famous rav of a number of cities, but most famously of Prague. And he wrote numerous svarim, and the most famous one of tshuvas of halachic decisions was written under the title Noda B'Yehuda. And he was considered in his time to be the foremost posek in the world. And even to this day, over 200 years later, his decisions are taken very, very seriously. And you know, it's not just if you go into a Torah library, you will see that there are walls and walls of svarim and walls of svarim of shilas and tshuvas of halachic decisions that were rendered over the generations by different rabbis. But there are some that you will say that, okay, this was a very great Talmud Chacham, but his opinion, okay, we'll count his opinion, but it's another opinion. In other words, you know, we'll count, okay, six say this way, four say that way. But there are some people who carried so much weight that their opinions would almost never totally disregarded and held to be, they were always held to be something that you had to reckon with. And one such person was the Noda B'Yehuda. His decisions were taken to this day with the most serious consideration. So the Shiloh was brought to him, it's brought here in the Noda B'Yehuda, the second Chelik of Yeredeya, that it's not on the sheet, but I'll just tell you outside what he says. The question was sent to him from London, and it seems that in London there were surgeons who were operating, I don't know exactly what type of surgeries were done at that time, but there was some sort of surgery that they felt comfortable doing, and the person who they were doing the surgery on died. He died on the operating table. And the doctors were very distressed because they really didn't expect that to happen. They thought they had this thing under control. So somebody suggested that now that he has died and you have him right there, so do an autopsy. Meaning, do a, In other words, until then, until that point when they were attempting to save him, they made only a minor incision in the person or whatever was necessary, and because they, out of the fear that they could, you know, they could kill him. But now that he ended up dying anyway, so somebody said, well, why don't you just cut him open now and you can really learn a great deal about the disease that he has. In other words, now we'll really get to the bottom of it. Because we'll see, let's see, why didn't this surgery work? Let's investigate this. So the question, apparently this involved a Jewish fellow, and the question was brought to the rabbis in the city of London, or so it seems, and there was a very big dispute that broke out, could you do such a thing or could you not? And the one of the central points that they were focusing on was the pasuk, which tells us, which we have here on the sheet, on the very first source here, we have a pasuk in Parashas Kiseitse, which tells us that if there should be a person who committed a sin for which he deserves capital punishment, for which Beis Din would kill him, so in certain situations, the Salisa also al eitz. In certain situations, that person would be hung on a tree. Now, he would not be hung to be killed because that's not one of the four Mises Beis Din. Okay, that's not one of the ways that Beis Din applied capital punishment. However, there's a question amongst the Rishon what it means. Rashi, in his commentary to the Pasuk, says that there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that people who were stoned would then be hung in public after they had died in order to show people that this is what happens when you do such a thing, right? Call on a skull of Nislin, the Gemara says, according to one opinion. So the Torah tells us, lo solon nivloso ala eitz. So the Torah says that even though you're supposed to hang this person on a tree, but nevertheless, you can't leave his corpse overnight. Why not? The pasuk continues, ki kavur tik bereno beyomahu. You have to bury him on that very day. Ki kilas elokim toloi. Because it is the curse of God that is hanging. Now, what exactly that means is there are different interpretations of the Rashi or Ramban, different interpretations of what exactly the pasuk means. But what seems to emerge from this pasuk in the view of most poskim is the concept of nivul hames, that a person is not supposed to degrade a dead body. In other words, what seems to come out from this pasuk is the concept of that even a corpse, even after a person has died, but there is a certain sanctity to his dead body, and it cannot be treated in a degrading manner. And therefore, the Torah goes out of its way to say that even though here there is an inyan, even though here there is a point to be made that people should see that this is what happens when you commit such a serious sin, but at the same time, you have to be very restrained when you do such a thing because of the fact that you're degrading a human body. That you're degrading a human body. This is what's called nivul hames. And in the tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer, he explains that the reason for this is because it's very interesting, I don't know if today this is relevant, but back in his time, in the mid-1800s, the Chassam Sofer said that there was a fundamental difference of opinion between religious non-Jews and religious Jews as far as what is the status of a human body after death. And that even religious goyim held that a body, they also agreed to the concept of some sort of neshama, some sort of spirit that is present in a human being, and that's the source of the good in the person and so forth. And upon death, that departs, and therefore all that's left is the guf. And the guf, the physical body, was never such a great thing in the first place. So therefore, the Chassam Sofer writes that in his time, that was the prevailing mentality amongst Goyim, that therefore, you could do whatever you want to a corpse. It didn't matter. Because what is it? What's there? There's nothing left. The good part of the person, the spirit of the person, has left him. Whereas, the Chassam Sofer says, the Torah view on such a thing is different. And the Torah view is that since the neshama housed, since the guf housed the neshama, since the body of the person was the house of the soul. So therefore, even upon the death of a person, there is still what the Chassam Sofer calls lachluchas kedusha. There is still a certain presence of holiness. In other words, it didn't leave completely. As much as the neshama went out, but there's still a certain sanctity in the human body, even after a person passes away. And therefore, that cannot be disrespected. That has to be appreciated and treated properly. And therefore, we have the concept of nivul hametz, that a person has that we're obligated to see to it that a person passes away, that the body is treated properly and is buried properly and so forth, because this is something which remains with some measure of kedusha even after the person has passed away. This is what the Chassam Sofer writes. Now, in this situation that came to another Yehuda who lived about 50 years earlier, so the question was presented that, okay, well, here it's true that you're going to do an autopsy, which is what they wanted to do essentially, is nivul hametz. It is degrading the body. But on the other hand, maybe you could make the argument that since it's for the good of science, so it's not degrading. Maybe it's a covet for him. Maybe it's an honor for the person. Why is that degrading him? He's going to help other people. So right, that we all could relate to that concept, right? That, well, why is that a bizarre? So that's what the rabbis who wanted to permit it put forth. Okay? And here's the connection to yesterday's parasha. They cited, which is a little strange to me, but they cited the fact that we find that when Yaakov and Yosef passed away in parashas Vayechi, so the Torah says that Vayechantu Osam, they were embalmed. They were embalmed. Now that's not something that's typically done in a Jewish funeral, right? When dealing with a Jewish mace. But why was that done? That was done. Why was that permitted? So apparently, why didn't anybody make an issue out of that and say you can't do it? The same way they made an issue that they should be buried in Eretz Yisrael, right? They went to very great lengths, both Yaakov and Yosef. It was not easy negotiation to arrange for that to happen. So why didn't they make an issue out of this? So this rabbi wanted to say that you see that if it's for the good of the person, so then it's not an issue. So even though he's not going to be buried right away or whatever it is, but if it's for his honor, it's all good. And therefore, he wanted to say that this autopsy should be permitted.
Yosef was you got an honor for that.
Yeah, all right. So whatever. But that's what this person wanted to say. Okay. Now, the dissenting opinion, the rabbi who disagreed, pulled out a Gemara of Bava Basra and said as follows. If you look here in the third source of on the page one, so the Gemara says the following situation. So it says, Masav Reb Zeirut. Okay, the Maisav Ibnei Brak. There was a story that took place in Bnei Brak. Be'echad Shemachar B'nichsei Oviv. Listen to this. There was a fellow who got a Yerusha from his father, and he had several siblings, and he sold off one of the fields, some of the property of his father, in unclear exactly what happened. He didn't consult. The other brothers were not in favor of it, but he went ahead and figured this is his share, whatever it is, and he sold it. Okay? Now, so the deal went through. Vameis, and then this son, this child, died himself. So the Gemara says, Ubo b'nei mishpacha v'iru lomar katan haya v'shas misa. So the brothers, now that this fellow passed away, so the brothers came to Beis Din and said they were very upset about the fact that he had sold this property. So they said the deal should be nullified on the grounds that he was a katan. He wasn't an adult. He wasn't a halachic adult. He did not have, I don't know if they were claiming it was before his bar mitzvah, or it was because he didn't have the signs of physical maturity that establishes a person as a gadol in halacha. But this is what the claim was, that he's a katan, and therefore the deal should be nullified. So the Gemara says, Ubal b'sholos Rabbi Akiva. So now, of course, the fellow who bought the property said, what are you talking about? He didn't look like a child to me. I didn't ask him to show me his birth certificate, but when he sold me the field, he looked like an adult, right? And then the brothers are saying, no, he was not able, he was not halachically of age. So they came to Rabbi Akiva, and they asked, Mahu Boko. They said, let's check it out. Let's go dig up the body. Right, and let's see. We could see if he shows the halakhic signs of maturity, right? That if he reached the halakhic signs of puberty, so then you would assume that you say that okay, he's a gadol, in which case the sale is valid. If not, not. So they came to Rabbi Akiva and they said, let's dig it up. So Amar Lahem e atem rishon lenavlo. So Rabbi Akiva said, you can't do it for two reasons. He said, first of all, that's not a good enough reason. So are you going to go disgrace his body because you have a dispute like this? You're not allowed to do that. It's disrespectful to this fellow who died, and you can't play around with such a thing. That's number one. And number two, he said, "V'ol simonim asuim l'shtanas l'achar misa." And he said, anyway, it's a waste of time because of the fact that he might have had the signs of physical maturity, but they may have gone away after death. So therefore, you're not going to necessarily prove it one way or the other anyway. And therefore, based on that, Rabbi Akiva did not allow it. So the rabbi in London said, well, you see that you can't do such a thing. This is not considered acceptable to go ahead and degrade, even though there was a big dispute that was involved. And here they have what would have, at least to them, seemed to be a simple solution. Let's go check it out. Go look, examine the body of the deceased. And let's see the situation. Rabbi Akiva said, you can't do it. Rabbi Akiva said, you can't do it. So this rabbi said, so therefore, you see that you cannot do any disrespectful act to a dead body, even if there is something to be gained for a living person. So obviously, as I'm sure everyone sitting here is thinking, that you'll say, ah, come on, that doesn't prove it, because that's all for money. But this is for a person's life. In other words, the case in London that they wanted to do an autopsy was because they're saying there's medical benefit to see why he died. So that's more important than money. The Gemara of Abbasra doesn't prove anything. That's a situation of, they were fighting over money. For that, you can't do it. But for Atzolos and the Fushes, maybe you could do it. This was the situation. And to that end, they cited a different Gemara, a very fascinating Gemara, Maseches Chulin, which is on the bottom of the page, which says as follows. The Gemara brings up the question. The Torah tells us that if a person commits murder, so he's chayav misa. For that, a person receives capital punishment. If he committed murder and it was in front of witnesses and they warned him, so then the person would be chayav misa. So the Gemara raises the question, how could you give capital punishment to anyone who commits a murder? Perhaps the person who he murdered was a treifa. Perhaps the person who he murdered had some sort of internal defect, which would have rendered him that he would not have been able to live much longer. In other words, unbeknownst to him, right? Certainly the Gemara says, they have a Kabbalah, that there are certain things called treifas. We have a whole parak in Maseches Chulin that deals with this topic, that there could be defects in an animal. We know that, for example, when an animal is slaughtered, when shechita is done, so it's not enough to do the shechita, but you have to also have, somebody has to check certain parts of the animal to make sure that the animal was not a treifa. That the animal was not a traitor, that the animal was not destined to die anyway, because had it been such an animal, then it would be not kosher, even if it had the proper shechita. Okay, so the Gemara here raises the question that how do you kill any person for murder? Maybe the guy was a traitor, maybe the person we murdered was a traitor. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, El alav, mishum de murinam zil basaruba. Says the Gemara, must be that the answer to this question is because we follow rove, that we follow majority, even what's called the ruba de lesser kamon, even a majority that's not specific to this situation, even in other words, the fact that most people in the world are not treifas would be something that would allow us to assume that the person who was murdered was not a treifa either, which, by the way, is the heter that we have to drink milk. Right, because one could ask, how could you ever drink milk from a cow? Right, by definition, a cow that gives milk is alive. How do you know the cow is not a treifa? Maybe this cow has some sort of internal defect that's going to cause it to die, in which case it's prohibited by the Torah, even if it underwent shechita. Right, so how would you be allowed to drink it? How would you be allowed to drink the milk of such a cow? So of any cow for that matter. So the answer is, because we follow the majority. Because there's no way you could check it out, because to do that, you'd have to kill the cow. So in order to drink the milk, you have to keep the cow alive. So therefore, what we would say is not reasonable that the Torah says every time you milk the cow, you have to kill it and open and examine it. So therefore, in that situation, we follow the rove. So too here, the Gemara says that we follow the rove. That's what it would seem. To which the Gemara says, 1 minute, how do you know? The chitema, the batkinalem. So the Gemara says, who said? Maybe the way we're able to execute a murderer is because we do an autopsy. Maybe we do an autopsy on the victim and see, let's see. Was he a traitor or not? You could find that out. So here, the Gemara is considering the acceptability of performing an autopsy in order to determine whether a person is chayav misa or not. In other words, where a life is involved, apparently there seems to be a hefter to go ahead and do this. Okay? To which the Gemara says that that would not help any. Right? So the Gemara says that that maybe that should be sufficient reason to perform an autopsy. To which the Gemara rejects it and says, "Venecha shema b'makom sayif neck of haver." The Gemara says that it wouldn't help because, assuming, let's say, that the person was murdered with a sword, so how do you know? It could be that he was a trefa, but the defect in him was in the same place that the sword went into. So therefore, you'll never. If you're going to worry that maybe the victim of this murder was a trefa, even an autopsy won't resolve that. Because what are you going to show? You'll open up the person, you'll see, oh, you see, the only defect in him was the sword cut through his heart. But how do you know? Maybe in that very spot there was a defect that you don't see anymore because the sword went through it. So you're never going to be able to conclusively prove this anyway. And on that basis, the Gemara says that we don't do the autopsy, we rely on the rove. But what seems to emerge from this Gemara is that had it not been for that, they were willing to go ahead and say, go do an autopsy, right? Because since there is a human life involved,
right.
So if there's a human life involved, so that's a very serious matter. And for such a thing, you could do nivul hames. Now, if you think carefully into this, you'll say, one second, but that's not really true, because they're doing it to kill the person, not, in other words, if they don't do the autopsy, the murderer is going to be left alive. If they do the autopsy, the person's going to, because, and this is a big discussion in the Mefarshim, and the Noda Behuda specifically, it's very difficult to understand exactly what the Gemara's intention was, but, okay, that's beyond this discussion. You know, one could look here in the Noda Behuda and see a very interesting shot in the Gemara that he has. So anyway, so returning to the topic, so the question presents itself, so is it possible to permit the autopsy that they wanted to do in London or not? So comes along the Noda Behuda and he says, I'll tell you the truth, I don't agree with any of these arguments, he said, because to me it's a very simple cut and dry thing. He said, he makes a very fundamental halachic distinction. He says, if you really could save somebody's life by doing an autopsy or anything similar to that, harvesting an organ from that person's body, he said, so of course you would have to do it. He said, what's the question? But he said, because we know that you could violate all the mitzvahs in the Torah except for three in order to save a life. So denigrating a corpse is not any worse than, you know, the other prohibitions in the Torah. You're allowed to go ahead and do those to save someone's life. So you could do this too. So he says, so on that basis, it would be simple that you'd be allowed. But he makes a fundamental distinction. He says, but that only applies if it's chola lefanenu. Chola lefanenu means if you have the situation right in front of you, if right here you have a person whose life you can save right now, if you do this autopsy, meaning in the London Shiloh, had there been another guy who was just wheeled in for the same surgery, and the first fellow died on the table, and now they say, before we do it to the second guy, let's do an autopsy and see what went wrong so we could save this guy. The Noda Behuda said that would have been okay. That you could have done. Because it's true. So you say you're degrading the mace. Okay, but you're allowed to do that to save the guy's life. But says the Noda Behuda, that's only if it's cholo lefanenu. That's only if the person, you have a situation right in front of you that you could save. But if it's just for the purpose of learning for the future, he says he does not accept that should be a heter. In other words, if it's not cholo lefanenu, he says he can't understand that that should be acceptable. And as a proof, he says, because the halachic logic indicates that, because he says we know, for example, that you're allowed to do things on Shabbos to save, let's say, a person who's dying on Shabbos or is seriously ill needs food, hot food, so you can cook it for him, obviously, even though it's violating Shabbos a lot, but you're allowed to do it to save the person's life. But does anyone say that you can go ahead and cook food on Shabbos because maybe some sick person is going to come to you and say, I need hot food? You can't do that. In other words, the heter to go ahead and be mechal all these surim is only when you have a situation right in front of you. But if you don't have it in front of you, the fact that it may come another situation like this, that he didn't want to allow. Yes?
Just we asked the
Shiloh
of Arabah.
Yeah.
And there was a patient who was getting particular therapy in the hospital.
Okay.
And he died suddenly, and we went to an autopsy. So Arbach asked, is there other patients in the hospital in the same situation getting the similar therapy? He said, yes. He says, and you must do
that. Right, that's right. That's right. And we'll see soon that not only the Shlomo Zalman Auerbach hold that, but Shlomo Zalman Auerbach went further and said you don't even need the consent of the family to do that. In other words, he said, because that's another issue, you know, if a person signed off on it, you know, so he said, he went very far and said that if there's a chol, and he was applying this note of Yehuda, he said that if it's chol for Nenu, you can do anything. You can do anything, because he saved the guy's life. He's right here, right now. However, if it's only a question that maybe it's going to happen again, you don't know if you do this autopsy what you're going to see if the guy's in front of you. So then, even though you say the same thing, you don't know if you're going to find out anything by doing the autopsy, but you might. So you're allowed to violate a prohibition of the Torah even for a suffix hatzolah. Even if there's a chance, you can violate Shabbos to save a person, even if there's only a chance that you'll save him. Even though you say, what do you mean? There's a good chance I won't be able to save him. That doesn't matter. You still could do it. Right? So therefore, that would be okay. But if it's not Lufanenu, then you cannot do it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Are we extending Kol Lufanenu to mean that even if it's not literally in front of him, but it's Vada, it's going to come up again?
So that's a question. So that's a big question. If it's Vada going to come up again, is that it seems from the note of Yehuda's Pesach, that he held that even that wouldn't be good enough. It has to be with a name of Mamish. It has to be, in other words, in order to violate an Isser in the Torah, it has to be that you have the situation right there, right now. But something is going to happen in the future, he was not ready to permit. And this Pesach was backed up by the, but if it's Lefanenu, then you could do it. And the Chassam Sofer 50 years later backed it up and said the exact same thing. And he went ahead and permitted also similar type situations. If there would be another guy right there who you could help right now, call Kavod. That's what he said. Now, this was not universally agreed upon. I'm sorry. I'm going to get that. So now, this was not universally agreed upon either, because a few years after that, there was a great German rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who wrote many famous Svarim Aruch Lener, and he wrote a series of tshuvas published under the title Binyan Siyum, and he disagreed fundamentally with this, and he said that you cannot save a person with someone else's dead body. And he went ahead and cited for this the following Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is here on the first sheet, okay, the second source. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Shmuel, and the Gemara interprets the pasuk here in Perek HaKones on Daf Samach. The Gemara interprets the pasuk that David had a question that he was going to war against the Plishtim, and they had, the battle was taking place in a field, a Jewish field, that grew wheat, and there were very high stalks of wheat, and the Plishtim, the Philistines, were hiding out in these stalks of wheat. So David asked the question, am I allowed to go ahead and burn down the field in order to expose these people? Let's go burn down the wheat.
Napalm.
So what? Right, that's right. So what was the Shiloh? So the Shiloh was that David said, I don't own this field. It's not my field. So it's Zelu. How can I go ahead? I don't know who the owner is. You know, on battlefields, I'll have to go find them, you know. So can we do this? So he was wondering, can we do this or not? So the Gemara says that basically, he asked Yosef Kami, boy, can a person save himself with someone else's money? Meaning, can I? Now here's a question: exactly what he meant by that. So the Gemara says, Shalchulei Osur Lahatzul Asmo B'Mamon Chaveru. They said to him, really, you can't. You cannot go ahead and save yourself by taking, commandeering somebody else's property. However, they said to him, Avalato Melech Umelech Paritz Geder. But you are a king, and as king, you have special dispensations. You can go ahead and take away people's land anyway. You have such a power, and therefore, on that basis, you can confiscate the guy's land and burn it down as you wish. But otherwise, you could not do it. Now, on this basis, so the Binyan Siyan said, now there's a question in the Rishonim, what exactly the question, his Shiloh was. Is the Shiloh that you can't, can you do it in the first place? Meaning that, you know, can I do it and say, well, I'll pay him later? That's the way Rashi seems to understand the question. And Tosfos on the page, not on the sheet, but Tosfos on the page understands the question somewhat differently, that can I go ahead and save myself with someone else's money and not even have to pay him? Because I'll say to him, listen, you have an obligation to save me. You have an obligation to save me, so therefore, you know, I took your property and saved myself, so don't send me a bill afterwards. So this is a big question in the Rishonim, but the consensus of opinion is that you cannot do it. So the Binyan Sion wanted to say that if you can't save yourself with someone else's money, you can't save yourself with someone else's body. Because at least by money, you could always pay the guy back. But if you disgrace a person's body, how are you going to make that up to him? What are you going to do? You're going to go ahead and sell him, I'm sorry, it's too late for that. Right? And if you will say, but 1 minute, but doesn't this person have an obligation to save you, Osamen al Damreyacha? So the Binyan Sion raised a very interesting point, that the obligation for mitzvahs ends when a person passes away. Mm-hmm. A dead body has no chiyuv to do any mitzvahs. Okay, so therefore, he doesn't anymore have that obligation. In other words, what you can say, you can use his body because you want to save yourself. He doesn't have a chiyuv to save you. Had he been alive, he would have a chiyuv to save you. He's not alive anymore. So this is what he said, the very strict opinion. Now the good news is that this opinion is not followed in the halacha, in the posuk. Okay, this seems to be the consensus, even though this tshuva generated a tremendous amount of back and forth. One of the Chassam Sofer's greatest Talmidim lived at the same time, Rav Moshe Shik, Maram Shik, wrote a very strongly worded response to the Binyan Sion, and then he in turn wrote a very strongly worded response back, and he wrote a strongly worded response back, and it never got resolved, but it's very interesting to read it, because they really went at it pretty strong, they're quoting sources left and right, but the fact of the matter is that the consensus opinion seems to be that a person would have the right, if it's chol lefanenu, to harvest an organ from a person. Now, in fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it's a mitzvah to do so. It's a mitzvah that if a person is dead, to take an organ to save someone else would be permitted. And as was mentioned earlier, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that you could do it even without consent. You don't need consent. You don't have to ask any of the family members. They're right there in the operating room. If another person is wheeled in, you say, if I take this organ right now, I can save the guy's life. You just take it. You could just take it, because the chiyav, what about his argument that the person's dad doesn't have a chiyav atzala? I don't know, but that's what they say. Now, the big issue, I'm sorry, just because it's late, let me just finish up here. The big issue that comes today is that a lot of these organs, and I don't want to talk in the presence of doctors, but from what I understand, a lot of these organs can only be taken while a person's heart is still beating. In other words, there has to be some sort of flow of oxygen to these organs, otherwise the organ dies and is not viable to be transplanted. So this brings us to the very, very serious question, which is still being debated, of what is the halachic time of death. In other words, if you go by what some people would like to go by, which is brainstem death, so then it would be possible to take an organ out of a living out of a person which is still not living, a person who's still viable. The organ of that is still viable, it would be possible to take it and transplant it. However, many poskim hold that the death is not that the death is only, the death of a person is only when his heart is no longer beating, when there's no respiratory activity going on inside of his body. And therefore, a person who's hooked up to a machine would still be considered alive, halachically, even though he may be brain dead, but the person would still be considered alive. Now this is where the issue is. In other words, because a lot of these organs, that's the question. In other words, to get it out after the person died completely, if it was medically possible to get it out of a person who is halachically dead, according to all opinions, then the consensus seems to be that it's permissible to do so. If you have a chol lefanenu, which today I believe it's always chol lefanenu because there are waiting lists for organs. It's not like you're going to put it somewhere and hold it. There's always the livers and the kidneys. There are always people that are waiting and waiting and waiting, and they walk around with beepers to get a call as soon as the time comes. So it would always be chol lefanenu. But the question is, are you allowed, is a religious Jew allowed to participate in this? Because if he is considered halachically alive, even if it's very precarious what his future is going to be, but if a person is halachically alive, if you take out that organ, he's definitely going to die, that would be ritzicha. That would be murder. You can't do that. In other words, the determination of what is halachic ritzicha is a function of what is considered a living person. So we need to know the answer to this. In other words, when is the person dead? So if brainstem death is accepted, then okay, then you have more possibilities. On the other hand, it seems that many, many held not like that. That they held that held and hold, not so. This is a debated point today in the halacha. But to my knowledge, the consensus opinion seems to be that you go by the heart and not by the brainstem. In which case, it would make it a much more difficult thing to do. Right now, furthermore, it would be, you know, a very precarious thing to go ahead and, you know, not so some people would say, well, then how could you even be on the receiving end of such a thing? Because you're on the receiving end of what may halakhically be a murder. In other words, the doctor who took it out of the person took it out because in his view the person was dead. But if the halacha holds that the guy was alive, so then the doctor, in a certain sense, murdered the patient. So then how would it be right to accept that? So, okay, this is discussion which is beyond my point here. It's something that would have to be discussed with a person who's very well versed in halacha and an expert in these in yonim, which is certainly a very, very vast thing. But just to summarize, so the bottom line is like this. The way it all comes out is that to go ahead and try to save someone is a mitzvah, and therefore to give blood is a chiyuv. Bone marrow is considered by many people today also a chiyuv because of the fact that it's relatively minor. From what I heard, there's a young man who used to learn in our yeshiva who told me recently that he donated bone marrow to somebody, a stranger, and he saved his life. And he said that the whole process was, he said it was one day that he felt achy, it wasn't painful, it wasn't like it hurt him to take it out, it wasn't such a big deal, it was aches and pains, but he says he will live the rest of his life knowing that he saved someone else's life. So therefore, when it comes to such a type of donation, there are many that say a person is mechuyev to do it. That already, some will say that since it has some sort of discomfort, so maybe the Radvaz that we mentioned earlier, that the ways of the Torah are pleasant, may come into play and say it's not an absolute obligation, but it is definitely a very meritorious thing to do. That person go ahead, a big schus for a person, you could save someone's life, so put yourself out and miss a day of work and be achy for a day, so what? But the guy lived 50 years longer because of this. So that's something that could very well be either a chiyuv or close to it. When it comes to kidneys, so a living kidney donation today is considered much safer than it used to be, although I don't think it's still 100% safe. I don't know the statistics on this. I don't think that anyone will go so far as to say it's an absolute chiyuv. But again, it is done. There were tshuvas written in the 1960s and 70s that forbade kidney donations, but it seems that everybody says that that's irrelevant now because things have changed and they got much more used to it and they could do it in a much safer way. So a live kidney donation would be something that a person could do but would not be obligated based on the Radvaz, that you don't have to sever a limb for such a thing. As far as the organs that are taken out of a person after death, that already is a big controversy. So that, you know, obviously, if there was a way to do it that made everybody happy, then everyone agrees that you could do it, then you should do it. Right? However, with that not being the case, it remains very unclear what the right thing to do is in such a situation. A person should certainly make a shelos chacham, and to, you know, there are those that argue, you know, they came out recently with a couple years back with what's called the halacha organ donation, HOD card that people carry in their wallets, and some people are in favor of this because essentially it says that if it's done kahalacha, I give you permission, I consent for you to take my organs. But there are those who challenge that. Who says it's going to be done? How do you know that? Who's going to be there? They're going to have, you know, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the operating room. You know, who's to say? It's a very, very touchy thing, and maybe it's not going to be done right. So maybe you're setting yourself up for a disaster. So as we can imagine, this is where the issue lies. But the main issue when it comes to this is, do we go by the brainstem death or do we go by the death of the heart? Which it seems that certainly many, many hold that you go by the heart and the l'chumra when you're dealing with such a serious issue of ritzicha. So a person would have to go l'chumra until proven otherwise. So that would remain something that's, you know, a question. But at the end of the day, if it could be done, so then, Rav Moshe Feinstein says a mitzvah to do it, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that it could be done even without consent. That's how great the chiyuv is. that you have to do whatever you can, and if you have the ability to do it, and you're right there, just do it. So this is an overview of the subject, the relevant gemaras, and if a shayla should, God forbid, come up in this area, a person would be wise to make a shayla schach.